everybody. Welcome to episode 410 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight episode. Today, Nick and I are going to be talking about Hunt for Wolverine, The Adamantium Agenda, number 3. Creative team, really quickly, it's written by Tom Taylor. The pencils are by R.B. Silva. The inks are by Adriano Di Benedetto. And the colors are by Guru EFX with letters by Joe Sabino. I thought that this one was almost as good as issue one of Adamantium Agenda. So,
agreed.
If anything, issue two is a little bit of a down, like setting up and introducing Mr. Sinister and everything. But there were so many like funny moments in this one where I went, "Yep, that's good dialogue," or "Oh, that's a funny moment."
Did issue two ever flashback? I don't remember. Because the flashbacks were the most interesting part.
Yeah, the flashbacks are, I don't know if I'd call them the most interesting part for me personally. I think they're the most compelling. Like the reason I wanted to have number 4 in my hands as soon as I finished number 3 was because I wanted to know what Wolverine was talking about.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think the flashback in issue 2 was them searching for his body and then finding it and seeing him start to heal. And then they kind of evacuated and it was just Iron Man toward the end of the flashback. It was just Iron Man, actually not even Iron Man. It was just the suit and Tony, you know, controlling it remotely, sitting there talking. And that's when he made the promise, remember, that he wouldn't experiment on him and he would make sure no one else did.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, so let's get into the synopsis of the issue, and then we'll talk more in detail about some of those cool moments. So one of the funniest moments – well, let me start with the flashback, and then we'll get into what I found humorous. Flashback. We've got Maria Hill talking about the radiation levels are nearly stable. Whatever blew up here was engineered to dissipate quickly. We see Tony standing there with kind of his – remote control Google Glass that he can control his armor with even when he's not inside. We see Jessica and Luke Cage and Spider-Man, and they're all just kind of hanging out. Tony remarks that, yeah, it does look like the radiation is dissipating relatively quickly, but he needs a few more minutes, quote-unquote, in here. And I think he means in, you know, the kind of the blast radius, if you will. And he's asking Logan to remark on, you know, what we were just talking about. Like, Logan, what do you mean you'll do something for me? Because that was the deal, right? Like, hey, I will, you know, you promise not to experiment on me and make sure no one else experiments on my body. I want to be able to basically rest in peace and I'll keep your secret. And he's like, what do you mean keep my secret? He's like, you and Cap, the Civil War, you screwed everything up. He's like, that's hard to argue against because you got to remember at the time of the flashback, it hadn't been that long since the Civil War. Although I don't know that it's much of a secret that they really screwed everything up.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But Logan's saying that, yeah, now you've put everything back together, but it's very fragile. And it's important that our people, he calls them, stay together, not for the X-Men or Avengers, but for the world. And he's willing to work with Tony to keep the people united, but there's something we need to talk about. And then he says, are you standing outside? And it's really creeping me out that there's that little hole in his lip that his tooth keeps showing through.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, definitely. And Tony's like, yeah, I'm standing outside. He's like, can they hear us? Tony says, hang on, I'll cut the external voice channel. Spider-Man's like, yo, what? Okay, they can't hear you now. Good, because I know what happened here, and you're not going to want them hearing this. And that's it. That's all the flashback we get. Yeah. So as I was saying, the most compelling part for me is I really want to know what it is that Logan knows. And also another question, how does he know it? Right? I mean, I'm not saying Logan's a dummy, but he's not exactly Tony Stark or Reed Richards, you know? So was it because of the nature of the blast or something that happened when he pushed the button to make it go off? There was a message on the screen. I mean, who knows? I guess we'll find
out. But then again, like, Tony Stark and Reed Richards had, like, have, like, their eyes to the sky. As we said, like, Logan has his nose on the ground.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
He might know more about what's going on in the street. But, yeah, I think it's something he saw with the explosion.
Yeah, that's my guess. So Then we switch back to the sub, deep underwater. If you remember last time, you know, Mr. Sinister showed up, X-23, Laura Kinney showed up. I always want to call her Laura Linney, but it's, you know, the actress, but it's Laura Kinney, X-23. And Sinister, in trying to blast one of the heroes, punched a hole in the side of the sub. And the funniest part, best part about last issue was the fact that they used the Avengers used Luke Cage to plug the hole. Spider-Man kind of webbed him in place and then used the webbing to kind of plug around him. So the scene opens up. We're deep underwater still in the sub. Somebody's screaming. It turns out it's Sinister because at the end of the issue, he did have one of his hands sliced off by X-23. And meanwhile, the traitor, the guy that stole the DNA from Mr. Sinister's laboratory, is like, help me. It's like, these people can't help you, traitor. And he blasts X-23. And he's like, Jessica, Spider-Man, we can't survive another hole breach. Contain Sinister. Like, focus on containing Sinister. So they're trying to web him up, but it's not as easy as it seems, right? I mean, Sinister's pretty powerful, although Jessica does give him a pretty good left. Then he's about to blast her. Tony has to kind of tackle her out of the way. And Sinister seems to forget about the Avengers momentarily. He's focused on the traitor. It's like, you take my work, you try to sell it to the Avengers, and before he can punish the traitor, X-23 shows up and slices off his other hand, which is just awesome. He's now handless. You know, he's got no hand. He doesn't have the upper hand. He doesn't have the lower hand. He's got no hand. He's screaming in pain, and so he teleports away. So it's pretty funny. And X-23 remarks, he's teleported out, he's gone. Spider-Man's like, gone where? Iron Man's like, doesn't matter. Sub's going down, that's what we need to concentrate on. Meanwhile, Jessica, don't let this traitor out of your sight. Spider-Man, Laura, round everyone up, get them ready to evacuate. Jessica's like, evacuate, we're underwater. And Tony's like, I know. I'll let you know when that changes. And he flies outside the sub and tells Spider-Man, hey, it's about to get rocky. And basically grabs the front of the sub and pulls it up out of the water. So then they evacuate everyone to the deck. And Spider-Man's like, get to your boats. Like, Tony's like, no, Spider-Man, wait, no boats. I sent a message out when we arrived. And they look up. Yeah, we see him. We see the company. And it's a SHIELD helicarrier. Basically, South Korea's National Intelligence Service helicarrier. So they start rounding up the prisoners. They're on the helicarrier, and Luke Cage is complaining. I can't believe you guys just left me there to seal the breach. And Jessica's like, you were very useful, honey. To which Luke responds, all I did was plug a hole.
And Spider-Man, Spidey has
you
to
can
quit.
Just tell he's like biting his tongue. Nope, there's literally nothing appropriate I can say in response to that. You can only imagine. All I did was plug a hole. Yeah, a certain line from The Office comes to mind, I suppose you'd say.
That's what she said.
Exactly. Anyway, the Korean intelligence officers thanking Tony Stark. Some of the people that they captured were pretty highly sought after by the Korean government. And Tony's like, happy to help. Would you happen to have an inhospitable and foreboding room on board where we can question one of them? And the intelligence guy responds, it's practically our specialty. So, again, another cool moment. You know, I'm going to assume that this is – well, I guess it does say South Korea, but I mean, you can only imagine North Korea definitely would be something they specialize in.
I don't think if they had a helicarrier, it would be working together with the SHIELD helicarriers.
That's probably true. So, Spider-Man, X-23, Luke Cage, Jessica, they're all in the room with the traitor. The guy that betrayed Mr. Sinister. And Spider-Man's like, how are we going to play this? Good cop, bad cop. And X-23 is like, my father's body's missing. Luke says, you tried to sell our daughter's DNA. Jessica says, to a room full of criminals. Spider-Man says, so three justifiably pissed off cops. And me? Just staying quiet. Gotcha. So, again, I really feel like Tom Taylor's showing off his dialogue chops here. There's so many great lines. So they get what they can out of the prisoner, Declan Fay, we find out his name is, and he doesn't know a lot. What he does know is that Mr. Sinister seems to be putting together a database of DNA, but he's not sure whose or what details. He worked on a different part of the project, and Mr. Sinister kept it all compartmentalized so nobody knew like everything, but he does know where, and it's the Kerguelen Islands.
So, I like how often Marvel characters can tell if someone's lying. Like, Daredevil can sense someone's heartbeat, and X-23 can smell if someone's lying or not. I like that convention a lot. Makes it easy.
Yeah, and I imagine Tony's probably got some kind of sensors in his suit, too, that can tell, read pupil dilation and, you know, heart rate and all that kind of stuff, so...
He's telling the truth. Let's move on.
Telling the truth. Let's move on. So, Tony briefs the rest of the team about these islands. They're called the Desolation Islands, one of the most isolated places on the planet. Getting there isn't the problem. It's the fact that there's no way they can get there without Sinister's defenses clocking us, you know, basically sensing them, not in any conditional travel anyway. He says we need to be small and we need to come in under the radar. Jessica's like, what are you suggesting? And honestly, I thought they were going to call Ant-Man. But instead, Tony has a better idea, and they all get their own Iron Man suits, I guess.
Okay. How do you think that works? How long has he had these suits?
It wouldn't surprise me if Tony has a suit for, like, everybody.
That's what I was going to ask. You have one for every Avenger, just in case?
Yeah. He's like the Batman of the Marvel Universe. You know, he prepares for every contingency.
I like it. Okay. I was wondering if in the movies, he's really fast at making them ridiculously. Yeah. So I was like, maybe he made them all when the mission started.
The other thing, it is cool to see these different armors. And that was what was cool about reading Iron Man back in the day, right? When he did come up with a new armor, like a stealth armor or the Hulkbuster armor or, you know, the War Machine armor. It was something special because it didn't happen a lot. It was like most of the time, you know. It was conventional armor, and maybe once every 2 or 3 years you'd get this specialty armor. The stealth armor especially because it was all black and it looked cool. But now they've changed – I mean, you know, the movie – every time there's a movie, it's got to be new armor, and they're constantly changing the armor in the comics. And, you know, based on the high profile of Iron Man now, you know, there's more eyes on the books, and so they feel like they – constantly trying to, you know, do something new and push the envelope. So,
well, he also looks more and more like the movie version. Not just Tony Stark, but like even the face looks a lot like the movie face more than the movie face looks like the comic.
100%. Yeah. But the point I'm making is that it's cool to see these guys each with their own armor, but at the same time, it makes Iron Man less special. You know?
Yeah.
So that kind of sucks in a way. But and the other thing, why does Jessica's armor have to be pink?
That way you know it's Jessica Jones. It should be purple.
Right?
Because the purple man and just the color scheme they use in all the Jessica Jones comics.
I guess it is pinkish purple. I mean, it's got a little purple. But I don't know. I mean, he does at least make them distinctive enough. You could, like, if...
And why isn't Peter just wearing the Iron Spider? Why is it to be, like, a new Spider-Man costume?
Maybe the other arms would get in the way. I will say, if I just saw this page of them in their armor, I would be able to guess who three of the four were. I wouldn't know who Jessica was.
I wouldn't know who Luke Cage is. I would be like, why? Yeah, what character carries around a giant wrecking ball?
I don't know. I feel like the shape of the head and the way the kind of the top of the helmet is, I would guess Luke Cage. Especially because it's yellow and black, which is his traditional colors. But anyway, so they all get their own armor. They fly in undetected. They manage to overwhelm the guards quickly and get inside, what do they call it? The behind the main blast door into the lab, basically. And they start looking around, and Spider-Man's like, Tony, he says, I know. This isn't just a database. This is a physical collection. If these swabs all belong to heroes, Logan's DNA could easily be in here. Another great moment by Tom Taylor. Tony says, the last thing we want is a bunch of Wolverine clones running around. That's the nightmare situation. And X-23 says, did you just call me a nightmare situation? Not intentionally.
Also, like when Spider-Man pulls back his Iron Man mask, he's still wearing the Spider-Man mask.
Of course. So Meanwhile, Jessica says, this isn't just a superhero collection. It's bigger than that. And Laura says, how big? Jessica says, at a guess, I'd say Sinister has collected the genetic makeup of every single person on the planet. Because in looking around, she found these giant storage banks, and it's just shelf upon shelf and row upon row of DNA samples, basically, of vials of DNA. Now we're told, next, Logan's secret. So,
great cover.
It is most compelling in my mind because I want to know what Logan's secret is. I also want to know what the heck's going on with Sinister. And is he going to show up with two stubs? Or is he going to show up with hands next time?
I was going to add, like we discussed, you're not really an expert on him either, right? Because I'll say, what are his powers? Can he like regrow limbs because of his study of mutants?
He can regrow limbs, but I mean, he is a very powerful, like he can, like super strength, you know, super reflexes, teleportation, some limited like telepathy and mind control. He can fire force blasts. I don't know if he has a healing factor or not, but being that he's a geneticist, he probably could just transfer himself into a new, like a cloned body of himself.
That's his most likely route.
Yeah, I would guess. I mean, he probably keeps clones as a backup would be my guess, just in case something like this, you know, happens. But I thought it was a very enjoyable issue. I haven't read a lot of Tom Taylor's work, actually. I always wanted to read that Injustice series, the one that's based on the video game, and I know he wrote a lot of that. And he's a very well-respected writer. I'm actually hoping to sit down with him at San Diego Comic-Con and talk about his graphic novel, The Deep, from Boom Studios, which they're launching a toy line, and it's debuting at San Diego Comic-Con. So, but I haven't read a lot of his work. I know he's done some other work on the X-Men and what have you, but... he really has quite the knack for dialogue. And what I'm wondering is, why'd you wait till issue 3 before we got these cool moments? I mean, there were some good moments in issue 2, like I said, Luke Cage plugging the hole. And issue 1 did have a few good moments, but I really feel like he's kind of hit his stride with issue 3. Oftentimes you'll find that in 4-issue limited series. Issue 3 is kind of the best one because it's kind of the climax. You know, where you have the big reveal, like, oh no, here's the big conflict or here's the big problem that the heroes have to resolve. And then it gets resolved in issue 4. So it seems like that could be kind of the formula that's going to play out here. But yeah, I thought it was a really, really fun issue for sure. Love the interaction between the heroes. What are your thoughts, Nick?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've kind of bounced back and forth, kind of like you. Where it's been like, which is better, Hunt for, I mean, Adamantium Agenda or Weapon Lost. And I really, like, as we just since we started, I've said, like, yeah, I love this team and what their dynamic will be.
Yep.
I love that this is the action movie one almost always speaks to me more than the other genre. But I like noir. But with the last two, Weapon Lost being less than stellar, this is by far my favorite of the four titles and probably one of my favorite single issues that we've read so far because it's fun. Like it's got that action element and I don't know, even X-23 works well within their team dynamic as far as like them playing off each other. And I love the scene between Wolverine and Iron Man, including the way it's drawn where their faces are split at one point where it's Tony and Wolverine. So,
yeah, I think that, the only thing I can say consistently about these four Hunt for Wolverine miniseries so far, not that we haven't read Claws of the Killer 3 yet or Mystery Madripoor 3 yet, but the only thing I can say so far is the only book that has stayed in the same position for me is Claws of the Killer. It's been at the bottom. It's been at the bottom. But the other three are changing position. Like for me, the first issue – If I'm rating the first issues, Weapon Loss was the best first issue, Adamantium Agenda second, then Mystery Madripoor, then Claws of the Killer. You talk about issue 2, I'm probably going to have to go with – it's really close, but I think I might give the edge to Mystery Madripoor and then Weapon Lost, and then Adamantium Agenda, and then Claws of the Killer. So far with these two, now again, I haven't read issue 3 of Mystery of Madripoor yet.
Or your favorite.
Or issue 3 of Claws of the Killer. But right now, Adamantium Agenda is above Weapon Lost, and Weapon Lost is 2. And we'll see what happens with Madripoor, and I expect Claws of the Killer to bring up the rear. And again, it's nothing against that creative team. It's just, you know, Charles Soule himself told us it's the horror book, right? It's zombies, it's horror, it's not my thing. I'm not digging the art, not really digging the story. I don't care for, you know, I've never been a big Sabretooth fan. I actively dislike Dakin, and Lady Deathstrike I'm pretty indifferent about. So I'm not invested in that story. You know, again, I don't think it's a bad story. It's just for my personal taste, it's just not what I gravitate towards. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad that they've been moving around like that. I don't know. It may be that we'll need to go back and, or I'll need to go back and reread them as like big chunks, you know. Oh, here's 1 through 4 of this. Here's 1 through 4 of this. Here's 1 through 4 of this. And read it as, you know, one continuous story, and then probably have a better idea of like how to rate it. If I even really need to, right? I'd probably be more interested in reading the Return of Wolverine series that's coming out from Soule and McNiven. So,
agreed.
What do you have to say about the art?
I like the art a lot. Like I mentioned, the one page I really like is where it's Tony shutting off his thing and talking to Wolverine, and their faces are like split. And just even like the cool kind of, it makes it look like it's an old, like it's a security footage, not necessarily a flashback scene, but the kind of the cool patterning over the art in the scene that is the flashback scene. Only some characters are covered by it and some aren't, which is interesting.
Yeah, I feel like the art is done pretty well. I don't know that I'd seen any of R.B. Silva's art before this. What I did notice is that he is pretty light on his backgrounds. And I don't know if it's just like a time thing, you know, like trying to stay on schedule. But it seems like every chance he gets an opportunity to skimp on the background, he does.
I can see that.
Right? Like the scene, any scene with the sub, it's just like, you know, that's all the colorists just putting in blacks and blues. Or Mr. Sinister screaming, and all you see behind him is arg, 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 arg. Or, you know, filling up the background with smoke or whatever. So that is a little disappointing. Only because I like, you know, a little more detailed art, a little more background. But I can't fault his sense of storytelling. He does vary the panels up, the panel layout up a little bit. Certainly nothing like, you know, Brett Booth or anything, but he does switch them around, uses a few insets here and there. So, yeah, I feel like the narrative, story-wise, very well done. It's a very well-paced comic. That may have been part of the reason I didn't like 2. I didn't really care for the pace of it. But I thought this one packed in just the right amount of story. It's got just enough of the, like, mystery. You know, we've got a couple of mysteries. So, yeah, I feel like it was a really well-done issue. And you kind of wonder, based on the picture that we get in the back of what the cover for 4 looks like, if the secret reflects badly on Tony. You know what I mean?
If it's Civil War related, if there's something worse, some retconning.
Well, I don't know. I'm like, my first thought went to, okay, somehow it was Tony's technology that was used in that bomb, and so he's ultimately responsible for it. But I mean, we see that Spider-Man, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Wolverine have all turned their back on him, and they're kind of walking away from him. You know, and he's in the background just kind of standing there with his head down in the armor. So I don't know. But yeah, that's a good point. It may, in fact, have something to do with Civil War. Otherwise, why would they have brought Civil War up, right?
Yeah.
Maybe just to kind of place it in time. Because again, I mean, yeah, Civil War was a real bad time, but I don't really feel it's a secret, you know? Like, what secret are you keeping that they fought? I think most people know that they were fighting, right? So, I don't know.
We shall see.
We shall see. Okay, anything else we want to say about Hunt for Wolverine Adamantium Agenda number 3?
Nope. I liked it. I'll say that.
Yeah, it was really good.
I recommend it.
All right. Well, once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and the ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available there, as well as at lrmonline.com. Where at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, as this is being released, it's a Tuesday. Tomorrow, Wednesday, San Diego Comic-Con 2018 begins, and thus begins my 5 days of no sleep. So much to cover, tons of interviews lined up, panels. I mean, there's so many great panels this year. There's no way I'm going to be able to go to all the panels I want to. Like, I literally could be in a panel from the time the show opens until the wee hours of the night and still not cover all the panels I want to go to, because there's times where it's like three awesome panels at the same time. So it's like anything at San Diego, you always have to prioritize. You just can't do everything. Plus, I would like to walk around on the show floor a little bit and, you know, say hi to people that I know. But anyway, we will be there. And if you're going to be there, please let us know. Manny and I would love to meet up with you, take a picture, hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard, and find out what you like about the show, maybe even what you don't like. So look for a lot of San Diego Comic-Con coverage. And my number one suggestion is, if you want to see pictures, follow us on Instagram. We'll be posting pictures from San Diego pretty much all week. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.